This podcast is a Bendigedig Media production.
Hello, I'm Michael Sheen, and you are listening to a Touchline Rant podcast. Episode 203 of a Touchline Rant podcast, brought to you by Bendigedig Media. Hello, Mitchell. How are you, my darling?
I'm very good, thanks, mate. I'm doing well, Luke. How are you, all right?
Yeah, I'm really good. I am really good, despite hating football to a passion that is unfathomable. I'm all right, yeah. The reason I'm all right is tonight we welcome another two new voices, new faces, new bodies, hopefully, to the podcast. We welcome Dan. Say hello, Dan.
Hello.
That's Dan. Nathan, say hello.
Hello.
And that's Nathan. That's Nathan for you. We are a Touchline Rant, as I've said. And last week's episode went down really well, so I just want to say thank you very much to anyone who listened last week. When we welcome Steve and Cassie, they'll be back.
Money's in the post. Money's in the post.
Yeah, they'll be back on soon enough. We're gonna ask our new host questions from the off. One's big, one's small. Dan, big or small?
Always go big.
Always go big. Who are you?
I am Dan. Hi. My background is performing, theatre. That's way back when, what my degree is in. Stumbled into radio. Been running a radio station for nearly 6 years now. Worked for local council. Don't hate me for that. And then it's kind of worked from being front-faced media to behind the scenes, where I'm now a media officer at a League Two football club. That's pretty much me. It's all right, isn't it?
It's good, isn't it?
It's good.
You are as close to professional as this podcast has ever got.
See, you say this, right? You say this, and you said this in the post originally. So automatically, expectations are going to be high.
Yeah,
I'm very unprofessional. Very, very unprofessional. So if you brought me in only to bring the professional levels up a bit, unfortunately, you've made a massive mistake. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
We'll see. Look, we're off to a good... I'm hoping that I am correct. You're already... Let's see how this goes. Let's see how this pans in. Nathan, you're having my big one next. Are you prepared for it?
I think so.
Okay, right then. Who are you?
Nathan, background in a bit of everything. Law predominantly. And then 3 years ago, made the jump from law to mortgage broker. Sort of fully qualified now, up and running. Football fan for as long as I can remember. Much like you, though, now hating football quite passionately.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
It's a shame you made the jump from law, Nate, because the amount of dodgy comments that Luke makes on this podcast, he probably could have done with one, you know.
That's why I did it. Yeah.
This is the way of saying this is... So, Nathan is our legal counsel now.
You are still officially our legal counsel, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyone who has any complaints about this show going forward, I'll leave his Twitter handle in the description.
Yeah.
Let's get in touch with him. Right. Stop yelling at me. Let's get it from... I know this. We've got a running order, but we're going to go... oh, hang on. I haven't given you my little ones yet. Can't forget the little ones. Dan, who do you support?
I am a Manchester United fan.
Nathan, who do you support?
Again, Manchester United fan.
Mitchell, strength in numbers, my friend.
Oh my God. Wow, I feel a bit of a claustrophobic here.
This podcast has now basically become, I mean, I am the dictator now. Because what I've done is by adding in Dan, Nathan, and Steve and Cassie, I've also added in 3 Manchester United fans, which makes 4 of us. So now we've got the majority. So that's fine. You're never talking about the championship ever again.
Unbelievable.
Right. I'm going to kick it. It's not on the running order, so we will go right slightly, but I want to get it out there first. Chelsea are up for sale. It seems like the best way to get this out of the way, because why, without getting too political, and Mitch, I'm going to come to you on this because you're the PR expert here, so I think you're the best person to come to first. Why is Abramovich still able to sell Chelsea? Why is that asset still in his possession? Because it feels as though if that asset was in any other country other than the United Kingdom, it probably would already be in the hands of the government by now, considering everything that's going on.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I'll be honest, I don't really know, because you've got...
I have put you on the spot there with a massive question.
But no, it's a good question. But the issue is you've got a situation where the Premier League and ownership, the Premier League have been weak on ownership for a long time in terms of regulation and who they're allowed to buy football clubs, let's be honest. And that's why there is a lot of stuff out there with, you know, when we had the Super League coming in around independent reviews and independent regulator, which people are looking for, because there seems to be this sort of middle area where the government looks at football and the FA and the Premier League, and the league will look to government, and they're able to sort of, I guess, you know, pass the buck, really. And I think, to be honest, yeah, it's totally against what any other ownership, and if it was not a football club, I think it would be, you know, you would be looking for the government to get involved more. But I think it's one of those where there are questions to be answered, really. And probably shouldn't be allowed to sell it, but I don't know. Other people who are paid more money should answer that question than me.
Yeah. Well, on to one of those people. Dan.
I think Mitch hit the nail on the head, really, isn't it? It's like everybody's passing the buck, and it's very, very Premier League to not take a stance. It's very, without going political, this government to not take a stance. I think it's a kind of hot potato of, we're in a very difficult position. This man has brought X amount of millions into the football world through, you know, owning now one of the bigger football clubs in the world. He's brought with that money into the country. So it's almost a situation where, I think you're right, if it wasn't football, it's a clear cut, thank you very much, we'll remove this from you. This is now the country's, like, we are taking ownership of it. But unfortunately, with football, especially big money football, the tail wags the dog. It's very much they choose their own rules at times. They seem to want to choose how to get out of a situation. And we'll talk about this, like, later on in the running order with, like, you know, change of rules to adapt to make things better for certain teams. And that's just, it's always going to be the case, unfortunately. And just the way that football's kind of, you know, Premier League football is handled this situation, is just, there's no right or wrong thing. As you said, it's people better paid in more stressful jobs than I tweet for a living, for Christ's sake. So
it is such a deep question. It's the best way to start. Let's go in deep. That's how I always find. And then just work ourselves back out. Basically, it's like cliff diving podcasting. what it is. What I find quite interesting regarding the wider aspects of football is that Manchester City are literally owned by a nation, basically. You know, basically. They're literally owned by... who are refusing to come out and condemn the conflict in the Ukraine, but will fly a flag around the stadium and get praised for it. I'm sorry. Like, you're a literal nation. Do you know what I mean? It's ridiculous. Right, Nathan, there's another side to this little coin which has emerged in the last week. Why is John Terry obsessed with Roman Abramovich? Why is he coming across on social media as if he's like getting over a breakup? He's as bad as Kanye West is on social media. Just, it's ludicrous. He's not going to shag you, John. He's not. What's John Terry's problem, basically? Nathan, you can solve the issue for John Terry, because I cannot see anything likable about that man in any way at all.
No, there isn't anything likable. It's...
just jumping back a minute, though, just quickly, about the whole Roman Abramovich and the ownership. Yes, it's probably owned by him, but chances are, and I haven't looked into it, so this is just off the top of my head, and I could be wrong... obviously, he's Russia, and we all know that. But is the holding company set up in the UK? Is it a British company then that owns Chelsea with him at the head of that company?
Yeah.
And is that sort of then the loophole that is being used, that they're just going to be removing a British asset and not a Russian asset, potentially? I don't know. I haven't looked into it.
But again... you've now taken the most professional crown off, Dan. He had it for like 11 minutes. You've now just immediately talked sense. This is what we've been missing. Because usually it's just loads of talking heads making noise. Nathan's come in, steamrolled it. Yes, mate. Love that. I did cut you off, but it was worth it.
No. It's going to go downhill from you, because I got no response to the John Terry question. But,
man's a prick. I think that's what we've established. I just think John Terry...
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's probably like a longevity thing with him, innit? You know, he was Mr. Chelsea. Whether he thinks he's going to get something out of fawning over him, I don't know. But...
oh. Is he still getting paid by Chelsea? That's the question. Is this self-preservation from John Terry going, this man still gives me a really good living? He's a nice guy. Like, I'm not saying that's what's happening, but, you know, if you're going to be defending somebody who has, you know, got actual ties with Putin, you've got to be some fire there. There's got to be some fire. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying there is, but I'm saying it's highly likely.
Yeah, it wouldn't...
regardless of covered.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if that's actually what happened. I've gone from the... conflict that we are having with Russia, with Chelsea and all these links, and I'm going to move on to something that is equally as destructive in Manchester United football club here, because I looked at the football club as a whole this weekend, and I thought, I don't know if this club ever like still serves me in the way that I actually need it to. Like, it just leaves me annoyed and upset now, that football club. Obviously, we got absolutely hammered by Man City on the weekend. Nathan, is there any good that's come out of that game in any way?
No, I don't think there has.
Good. That cheered me right up. Thanks, Nathan.
No, I do try. That's part of my aim. No, to say no, nothing's good to come out of it... No, I don't think anything has come out of it that's sort of positive and that can be sort of looked on as something that we can work on and move forward with. And again, this is sort of linking into sort of things that we're probably going to discuss a little bit further down the line, but Scott McTominay came out, and I think he's the only one out of that bunch of players that we had on the weekend that could relatively hold their head above water and go, I put a shift in. Even towards the end, didn't look 100% bothered, but he did put a shift in. He did look like he wanted to be there and try to do something.
Yeah. Scott McTominay for me should be given the armband, because it's not at this point in time, it's not about whether he's technically good or not. It doesn't matter to me.
No.
Because he's nowhere near the most technically gifted player at our football club, but he arguably cares about it more than anyone else who's at that club. And at this point, I think that's more important to me than technical ability. I just want someone there who I know is going to care about losing.
It was like Gary Neville, though.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the things that have been said about him over the years of, you know...
I think Jamie Carragher called it out to me on broadcast one evening, was who wants to be Gary Neville growing up?
Yeah.
But that's the type of player that we need at the moment, is somebody who's going to put a shift in and just work and work and work until that final whistle goes. And
not just go, oh, we lost it, lads.
Yeah. I think for me, he's got everything that I would want. I was actually talking to someone today. Let's move to Dan. Let's get the United contingent out of the way, mate. Let's.
Can you see him waiting to just go, yeah, yeah, shit.
I know.
Yeah, it's great.
I joked last week when he found out that Cassie was a Spurs fan and Steve was a United fan. And I said to him, as a Forest fan, you're going to be the only one who's happy on this podcast. And they bloody won again. Like, Forest just keep winning. I was talking about our squad and I was genuinely looking at it sort of like through defence, midfield, attack. I picked out very, very few players that I would be like, yeah, I'd keep him. Like, I'd happily lose. Probably I'd keep left back, I don't think is an issue. Right back, I'd lose both if it came to it. Someone came in with a good bid and I could replace them. Centre back, I keep Varane, maybe Lindelof. Am I being too harsh on the squad, Dan? Oh.
I don't think you are, and that's as a Manchester United fan. It's hard right now to see a squad like you look around the teams that we are still rivals with, like, you know, Man City's the most recent one. We just played them, got tamped by them. I think it's always been a thing of, would we take that person from their team and put them in our squad? Would they make it? And you mentioned like the likes of Neville, that era of player. There's not many players from other teams you would have put in. You probably look at Shearer, Henry, those players kind of like in that era of, you know, football. Right now, there's not one I would say that you'd look at and go, they're the best in that position in this league. And if you want to compete, if you want to be up there, if you want to be in and around it, you need to have the best. Manchester United have got the funds to go out and do this from the outside. It's spouted all the time. One of the most successful football clubs. We've got sponsors for everything. We've got a tractor sponsor. Exactly. We've got a tractor sponsor. There's money coming everywhere. But it seems to be that there's no identity to Manchester United at the moment. And does that stem from, you know, currently we've got an interim manager. He probably won't be there. Can he kickstart something? No, because the players that are there are looking at him going, what's the point, mate? Like, supply teacher coming in, looking after everything. When you're gone, we're going to stop misbehaving. We're going to get a new manager for 6 months. Then when we don't like him, we're going to kick off again. That seems to be the mentality of the players are running the roost. And it's been a thing since Sir Alex, you know, leaks coming out when players aren't happy, heads dropping 50 minutes into a game, let alone 25 minutes left, like 5 minutes into a second half, players' heads go and they don't want to be there. It's, for me, it's the lack of identity. It's the lack of what is Manchester United. You said it before, does this team represent or does this team do anything for you? Probably not. Like, we've all been to games. We all go to games. Do you feel anything when you're there? No. I was at the FA Cup game and lost to Middlesbrough. Did I feel anything? Pissed off, mainly. Did it hurt? But I'm like, no, it didn't hurt, because it's kind of going, oh yeah, fair enough. That's probably the level that we're at right now of going, we'll just throw it in. We can't be asked to beat, you know, a team we really, on paper, should be putting to bed. And that's the annoying thing for me, is the trying, the identity, the fighting for the shirt. And it's always been said, even when I was growing up, you put a Manchester United shirt on, you play for that shirt, you play for the badge, you play for the fans, you play for the history. Right now, on the pitch, is anyone doing that? No. I think the identity of it, people care about their own PR rather than actually going on a football pitch and doing their job. I think there's a lot of positive individual PR around the place. Mm. Ronaldo's a brand. Does he care? No. Cavani can choose, pick and choose when he plays. Rashford, his PR is probably, you know, is better off the pitch than it is on the pitch. He comes on the pitch, nobody cares. And as a fan of that club, you're going, what is this? What you're watching? What are we trying to achieve? Because probably the FA Cup was the best chance at silverware we had like this season. Let's not pretend we're not going to win the Champions League. If we do, we're making a mockery of the tournament. But it's, I think that's the annoying thing is just you see the kind of decimation, and there's nobody kind of taking that lead. And we mentioned players kind of doing that. You want to look on the sideline and see somebody, you know, screaming till they're red in the face. And the players want to be shitting themselves before they get to the tunnel, let alone into the dressing room. Like they need to have that fear of God put in them of every time going, we've messed up here. Like we're collectively going to experience this. You know, we talk about the hairdryer treatment. You think right now, like there's too much player power where they go,
oh, this
piss off, mate. Yeah, they'll just go, piss off, mate. See you later. See you next week. Thanks for putting my money in my bank. See you on Monday, because I'm not coming in on Sunday. Do one. That's what it is. That's what it is. Arrogance of just footballers, and we see it more because, you know, Manchester United are very much in the spotlight all the time. Unfortunately,
I know what I would do. I would genuinely. I take quite a hard line on stuff like this because my two favourite managers are Clough and Ferguson, and it's like they wouldn't. It just wouldn't happen because they wouldn't put up with it. They'd be like, I don't care who you are. If you're acting like this, you're out, you're gone. And they just get rid of them. And it seems to be there's too many players in and too many leaks coming out of the first team. And there's actually, when you look at the squad, there's a handful of players that I'd be like, yeah. Like, genuinely, as much as it pains me to say, if someone came in the summer with like a £60 million bid for Rashford, I'd bite their arm off. I'm like, yeah, have him.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned it there, like it's happened at Manchester United. It's happened. Beckham, Van Nistelrooy, Ronaldo. Yeah. Players who really you would never dream of. Keane, never dream of like leaving. Mentioned right at the beginning, like you know, players like Jaap Stam, like people like that, kind of game changers in their own right, individuals, but as soon as you became an individual in that squad, I'm sorry, but this isn't for you, because there's no time for individuals. It's all about a team. It's all about that collective. We're fighting for this thing. The whole thing at Manchester United for a long period of time was, we're Manchester United. Everyone hates us. Good. Let's make them hate us. Let's prove why they should hate us, because we are successful, because we are going to go out there and rip a team apart. Right now, like Sunday's a prime example of, God, everybody's gone, these are jokers. Like, this is pathetic. This is not Manchester United. We can rip these apart. And you know what? They probably should have scored more. They could have really embarrassed us. And they've done it before.
The score actually flattered us somehow.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Talking about Mitch, this I found a way to bring you in. I've just stumbled across it. So I mentioned there Clough and Ferguson. Weirdly, I was thinking about Brian Clough the other day and wondering whether or not you're actually managing this time. Could Ferguson and Clough manage now with the way that social media is, and how it's even bigger than when Ferguson left in 2014? You know? Yeah. Could they survive in this current climate, do you reckon?
I think Clough would have... He'd have hated social media. I honestly think Clough's the sort of character that would probably have gone, screw this, no way, I'm not going to bother. If that's the environment,
there's no way Clough would have an Instagram.
He definitely wouldn't have an Instagram, and he wouldn't be having it. Fergie would probably contact Mr. Instagram. He'd probably contact Zuckerberg and say, if any of my players try and set up an account on here, don't let them. Don't let them tweet.
That seemed like an actual thing. So obviously, a lot of clubs and a lot of players were on social media in Fergie's last two seasons. not one trace of Manchester United, i.e. players or club, was on any form of social media. The day he retired, or at least the week or 2 weeks after he retired, you got players joining. Rio Ferdinand was probably one of the first to promote his brand, and then the club. So you're absolutely, like, you're spot on. Like, Ferguson was so kind of like a stranglehold of everything, going, I'm going to control your lives. And that's mental. Like, that one person would have that effect.
The players as well. It's the players that he had. Imagine if Beckham had been playing that little United that little bit later. Say his career had just been along the sort of Wayne Rooney trajectory. Mm. He'd be mad. How can you tell a player to not go on social media? Like, if that, imagine telling Paul Pogba, no.
Well, he used to know a lot of the bar owners, didn't he, in Manchester? And he would basically say, if one of my players comes in here, then let me know. And there were times where he'd turn up and the players would be in like a club, and he'd sort of come in like your mum or your dad dragging you in from playing outside when you've been called in for your tea for the last half an hour. And basically, I could imagine that, yeah, that would have been his approach with social media. Clough obviously wasn't managing anywhere near as recent as that, so he would have definitely had the same stance on social media, I'm sure. But I don't think he would have wanted to manage in an era where there was player power like this at all.
You hear the mad stories about Clough. I would not have put it past him if he was managing this era to collect everybody's phones and just put them in the shower. Just try to go on social media now. Right, let's go train. Like, it was just something so kind of right. Yeah, I'm in control.
Brian, I could literally talk about Brian Clough all night because he's ridiculous. The man was just, I don't know how he was so good. I have literally no idea how he was so good. Mitch, staying with PR, because you're the PR guru here. If you are waking up after that game, Man United have lost 4-1 to Man City, and it's ridiculous. How do you, as Jadon Sancho, you're in charge of his social media, you're like, I've got a post on his Instagram and his Twitter now after that. What can I say that is different from we'll do better next time, we'll keep working hard? Like, it's the most thankless job in the world, surely.
Hashtag we go again. It's in the end, it's like, if that happens, so when Man United will win in league, and now when you know, anyone who wants to win, let's take the Premier League, for example. Obviously, there are other competitions. If you want to win that competition, if you're losing more than 3 games a season, it used to be maybe you think about 4 games a season, you're losing any more than that, you're probably now getting out of contention to win it, right? If you're losing around that number of games a season, fair enough. You can come on, go over to the fans at the end of the game, clap them for being there, and you can go on social media afterwards and say, look, we didn't put a performance in, you know, we go again, whatever you want to say afterwards, all that stuff. When you keep continually putting in not only poor performances, but also apparently not giving everything in the game, when it's quite apparent that, you know, there are players that want the whistle to blow after 50 minutes, that becomes a much bigger issue, because in the end, it's just lip service, isn't it, really? And you, actions speak louder than words. So you can't, to be honest, you should, you know, all you're doing really is just showing that what you're saying is futile. You're not, you know, if you come out sort of 7, 8, 9, 10 times a season going, that wasn't good enough, eventually you could say anything, but it's just absolute, it's absolute, you know, lip service bullshit, whatever you want to call it, really. And what you've got to get on the pitch and do it, haven't you? So I think it's probably better to just not say anything if you've put in another performance like that on social media, and maybe get off there and actually be having conversations about going in earlier to training the next day and putting stuff right, rather than first thing you do is get on social media and look, if you go out and, you know, front up like McTominay did in front of the cameras, I got a bit more respect for that, to come out and and front up then. But, you know, coming on social media 2 hours later with us trotting out the same shit again, it's just going to piss fans off, isn't it?
I don't need to see any more pictures of David De Gea clutching his head, lying on the floor. I'm done. I don't need to see him in despair. I'm sick of it. I'm fucking sick to death. I've had it up to here. Nathan, at this point, do you think that it would just be better PR for them after a result like that to delete their Twitter account and just go off Twitter and just be like, I'm going to focus now?
Just don't be honest. I think it could be the better solution. But
yeah.
Instead of doing like the whole, like you said, like the managed messages and the managed sort of PR,
it might work better if
they just did not so much like a just recorded themselves or like got a PR or their agent or whatever to record them just talking and explaining it away and just giving something instead of just this whole, like you said, we go again, we've got to improve, wasn't a good enough performance. And then, as you said, a picture of them holding their head or just looking dejected or whatever the case may be.
Come out and
give us real emotion, give us something to hang our hat on and go, all right, it was a bad day
in the office. They genuinely care. They're playing for the badge. They're playing for the club.
They want to keep on improving. It's not just a pay packet at the end of the day. Get us on side. Because then when you're at the stadium, like Dan was saying earlier, you know, there's nothing there. There's no raw anymore like there used to be. And I don't want to get into this thing of the Manchester United of old, because let's be honest, as Manchester United fans, how long do we slate Liverpool fans for of hanging on to the past and hanging your hat on it? I don't want to get into that with us. But at the same token, going back a couple of seasons, we were there and it was attack, 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 attack. And you were giving everything you had to keep that going and keeping the team driving. Now you're not even hearing that anymore, and that's the downfall, I think, of the lack of engagement then from the players and the lack of the seeming lack of their wanting to care.
I think there's a fine line with social media, because it could be such a great way. Like, I believe the only way of dealing with it, like McTominay did on the weekend, but like Troy Deeney used to. Troy Deeney would always do it. Troy Deeney would always just say it as it is. And that's what you want from people. Just say it as it is. We all know you're shit. You're shit. There's something wrong. We can see it. Everyone sees it. There's no point in hiding. Just say it as it is. Dan,
all this talk of Man United on this episode, even the bloody Zoom down tools, I don't know what's going on. I can't even see any of my faces anymore. It's then a Man United has decided, oh, I can't be bothered with the rest of this. I did notice
that I could stop looking at you. I don't know why that's happened. I mean, it's your Zoom. It's just all technical. I'm saying. But
you're still sounding great, though. Still sounding great. So that's fine.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Dan, and say, it one player from the past, any player at all, if you could see what they're on like on social media, but how they're actually like, not the polished PR version, just them, they would be in control of their own social media and they would post whatever they wanted. Who would it be?
Not the polished PR version from any player.
Yeah. So it's got to be Gascoigne. Yeah.
It's got to be Gascoigne.
But Gascoigne would be class. That's the thing. It's annoying as social media I find it at points. Poor Gascoigne would be British. Someone like Maradona as well.
Oh yes. We're not gonna down like his drug route, but he'd be right. Just posting pictures left, right, and centre. It's going, not a bad life, is it, lads? That's all you want. You just want players to be real.
Maradona on a beach, surrounded by beautiful models, just being like, I'm having a great time. Like, imagine you're on Instagram, it's late at night, and then you get a notification, Maradona has gone live.
Oh, what the hell?
It's 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. And Maradona's live streaming him in a club. That's what I want.
I think players, so on the social media, I think Gary Neville said this on the overlap. So it's not my words. I mean, I could take it as my own, but I'm not.
He shows you integrity.
He said he's got absolutely no issue with players on social media, but it has to be the players. It can't be the PR company. If you want to be on social media, you're looking after that account yourself. You're logging in. You're tweeting. You're posting things because then it's yours. If you don't want to do that, don't be on social media because you're on it for the wrong reasons. And he's absolutely spot on because it's just, I think you said it. It just is the best and worst because you are closer to players, but like with the De Gea thing, you see copy and paste this like 22 times from every single player, and
yeah,
it just waters it down. You just go, oh, come on. But this isn't a new thing with players and social media. We've all seen, you know, I can't remember what play it is, but where it says, can you post something like, we play terrible, well, we'll get back in training, up whoever it was. And you kind of go, yeah, it's always happening. Yeah. Players are just lazy. Players are babies that have been given a lot of money. That's basically what's happened.
And Nietzsche B, wasn't it? Yeah, I was trying to remember who it was. Yeah. Victor and Nietzsche B. Yeah, can you post something like absolute classic? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not a new thing. It's just more, especially when teams lose, you just see them get pouters. And ultimately, you know, it's not going to be them reading it. It's not going to be the player reading it. It's going to be their kind of underpaid media intern who has to look at 700 of these messages because they're on so many accounts.
How did that feel, Dan, every week?
It's put my own social media into perspective, so I don't.
I wasn't trying to be snipey, but obviously, you know, you've got your portrait. You know, you've got the league account and the club account and everything. And like, how does that feel? Is it a genuine sort of like when they go sideways? How do you then cope with you getting pelters of the club then more than, you know, obviously the player and stuff?
It's hard. It's hard at first because you kind of take it personally. You go, oh, I was terrible. Oh, dear. They're not happy with me. And then you go, oh, actually, you know, they're aiming it at the badge. And ultimately, that's every single club account will be the same. They'll get abuse, but it'll be aimed at the badge. It's never anybody individually. I'm quite vocal and quite open on my own social media. So there is part of the fan base that knows who I am. They know that I'm behind the tweets. They know there's a team of us. So we've got, honestly, quite a good kind of fan base with stuff like that. There's still stuff that kind of comes through that you look at and you go, come on, mate. Like during a game, telling me to make a sub. Like I'm going to go down on the touchline and go, actually, John329 has said we need to take X person off. Can you have a word? Like, we're not going to do that. But that's like the club accounts. For me, I could never, ever pretend to be somebody else. Like through even like that real person taking on their account, I think it's just such a weird. I mean, it needs to be done, obviously, because we need to protect players' PR. We need to make sure they don't say anything stupid. But it's just the abuse that they must get. Like Harry Maguire, for example.
Oh, God.
Like the stuff that he gets on a daily basis, like even stuff that he's tagged in, and it's some people will go, "Oh, it's part and parcel of the job." Well, yes, but also no, like. When he's posting a picture of his dinner, don't call him a twat. Like it's irrelevant about the football club. But yeah, it's a job ultimately. It can be a fun job, but it can also be one of the most difficult jobs. And you know, these people like Manchester United will have 15, 20 people doing the media roles like overall across their accounts. So they'll have a good support network there. So that's for me, I've stopped kind of tweeting them because I know it's not gonna. It won't do anything ultimately if I shout at somebody on social media.
I cannot wait until I'm watching TV one day and you just there's Dan with an iPad just charging across the touchline. Fucking take him off. I have tweeted you thrice.
Yeah. Sometimes I do feel like replying back going, oh, all right, I'll go tell him. Thanks for that. Like sometimes I go, when you score a goal, I'm like, oh, well, now you've said it is more obvious, isn't it? that's football fan Twitter though. It is fun, but sometimes you get people who you just there's no right or reason with it. It's just abuse, constant abuse.
I can't even imagine. I enjoyed that. I think that's a natural end point to a conversation. Congratulations on the debut. How did it go, Nathan? Did you find it okay? Did we show you where the teas and the coffees are, and you know what to do if you run out of paper and all that stuff?
Yeah, no, it was good. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, and look forward to the next one.
It'll be good. Dan, did you all right? I mean, I think that you both, you know, sort of rubbed off on me in the best way, because I haven't said anything, as far as I know, deeply offensive about any football clubs this week. So that is
great. Go on, say something. Say something. Offend someone.
I suddenly feel like Johnny Rotten on a 70s TV show being goaded into calling someone a cunt. fuck those Chelsea fans that chanted Roman Abramovich's name.
Oh, yeah, fuck that.
There you go. There he is. He's
back. There we go.
There you go. And I don't even think that's offensive. Just fuck off. Dickhead. I enjoyed that. Yeah. Mitch, any more?
Nah, I'm good, mate.
Nah. All right. Well, thank you very much, all. And we'll be back next week. And I cannot remember who will be on it, but I will be. So come back for me, if nothing else. Mitch will probably be on it. Bye.
Hey.
Hi, this is the Blender Coach, and you're listening to A Touchline Rant's latest podcast, Back of the Net.